And this is KTOO in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumery. State education officials say the Juneau School District can keep more than $2 million in supplemental funding it got from the city. But as KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, a potential amendment to state code could restrict how Juneau covers costs outside the classroom.
The state sets a limit on how much money a local government can give to its school district. The city and borough of Juneau has funded the Juneau School District up to the local limit for decades. It also routinely funds beyond it. This spring, the Assembly gave the district $2.3 million to resolve deficits in transportation, after-school childcare, and other funds. But in a June letter, the state said that wasn't allowed. Will Muldoon chairs the school board's finance committee. He says this hasn't been an issue before.
The state had stated that we had violated perhaps the spirit, if not the letter, of local contributions in regards to education funding. And that caught us by surprise a little bit, where these are things that Juneau has consistently done.
The district argued that the cap only applies to city money that pays for instructional costs. The state says it's broader than that, and they plan to make that clear in an amendment to state code. In the meantime, the Juneau School District can keep the $2.3 million from the city. Muldoon says he expects the board to continue to request city funding for non-instructional programs in its upcoming budget cycle.
I don't think it would be prudent for us to make large-scale changes of behaviors on unknown proposed code that will most likely not be in effect during that time.
But other changes are coming. COVID relief funding for schools will run out next year. So will this year's one-time state education funding. Between that and higher salary and insurance costs, Muldoon thinks the district is entering its next budget cycle with a $7 million deficit. He says they don't have many levers they can pull to address it.
We do have some vacancies right now that are saving us a little bit, but that's also a strain as well, right? We budget positions because we need them.
A permanent increase in state funding would help districts across the state avoid cutting staff or programs. The Alaska Senate passed an increase to per-student funding last session, but the bill hasn't left the House Finance Committee. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
A team of researchers has been given almost $2 million to see if seaweed in southeast Alaska is absorbing rare earth elements. The team, led by the University of Alaska Fairbanks, is specifically looking at seaweed growing in the water near Boken Mountain on Prince of Wales Island. Boken Mountain is known as a rich deposit of the coveted elements. KRBD's Jack Darrell reports.
Rare earth elements, or REEs, are a class of metals. They're critical in satellites, magnets, cell phones, and the kind of batteries used in green energies like solar. Currently, the market's dominated by China. This University of Alaska Fairbanks-led project is a response to the Department of Energy's call for alternative domestic sources of the metals. Cherie Umanzor is the lead researcher on the project. She's a professor at UAF in Juneau, specializing in seaweed farming. She says seaweeds are like sponges, which means they can absorb rare earth metals just like nutrients. The question for researchers is how much.
Being able to quantify how much they are able to accumulate and specifically what types of elements they are uptaking and where in the tissue are they housing it.
Umanzor says for every ton of REEs mined in the traditional way, hundreds of tons of toxic chemicals are released into the environment. This project hopes to change that.
But this is what we are aligning to as humanity, is green energies, and the green energies are highly dependent on rare earth elements to a great extent. So to make them green, we actually have to make mining green, and that's really what excites me.
This spring, the team will be testing the seaweed samples to see if they're absorbing metals washed into the water. The thought is that they're washing off the rocks around Boken Mountain into the stream systems, and then into the ocean, and then into seaweed. But even then, would there be enough to make a cell phone or a battery?
Right now, no. There is no way.
Umanzor says the problem is scale. She says if the concentration is what they think it is, a metric ton of seaweed would produce about a gram of REEs. That's about the weight of a paperclip. And that's only in the places in the ocean where there are REEs in the first place. This project isn't focused on the extraction, though. The goal is to understand the geochemistry of REEs in a place like Boken Mountain and the role seaweed could play.
The project itself is very exploratory and a moonshot on its own, but if it works, it can really be a game changer, not only for Alaska, but for the United States as a whole.
For Umanzor, seaweed holds many secrets, and we are only beginning to tap into its potential.
They are old creatures, and they are so versatile. You know, you find them in freshwater, saltwater, in the tropics, in the Arctic. So I just wonder, how is it that they can adapt to such extreme conditions? Imagine, for example, seaweed in the intertidal. How come we go at low tide and we step on them, and then when the tide comes up, they go back to life kind of thing?
Southeast Alaska is quickly becoming a hub for seaweed farming, Umanzor says. And now, it's just a matter of scaling up. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
Alaska spends a lot of money on education, roughly 40% more than the national average per student. But research presented by the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research suggests that number doesn't tell the whole story. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has more.
It doesn't take much thinking. Anyone who's spent time in Alaska knows that things just cost more here, and education is no exception. But how much more? Dana DeFeo, who leads UAA's Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, tried to answer that with a study in 2022. She and her co-authors first looked at the state's so-called cost factor. That's part of the education funding formula that corrects for the higher cost of living in smaller rural communities. DeFeo and her team also adjusted for the fact that small schools are more costly per person to run.
And that adjustment alone, it's explained more than half of the difference between Alaska's spending and the national average.
So if you take into account the cost of living in, say, Unalakleet or Thorne Bay compared to Anchorage, Alaska spends about 20% more than the rest of the country on educating its kids. But, of course, prices in Anchorage are quite a bit higher than they are in the rest of the country. So DeFeo and her fellow researchers took a look at a widely used cost of living index and used that to make an apples-to-apples comparison.
And when we did that, we actually find that Alaska dips below the national average by 7 percentage points in 2019.
That is, after you consider the cost of gas, groceries, medical care, and school supplies, electricity, and everything else it takes to make an economy run, Alaska actually spends less per student than the rest of the country. And the gap has grown bigger in recent years. When they first looked at the question using 2017 data, Alaska's spending was just about on par with the national average. But Alaska's per-student spending grew 3% between 2017 and 2019. So how did the state fall further behind?
What that means is that other states are investing more in public education. They're doing it more and faster than we are. And I think that's going to be a big deal for Alaska.
Where is Alaska's school money going? Well, DeFeo points to three big drivers of rising costs. We've already talked about one, small schools. Small schools are just more expensive to run than bigger ones. Turnover is high, they have to pay higher wages to attract teachers, and they can't take advantage of shared resources in the way that larger districts can. Another is healthcare. Even outside of education, Alaska has the highest per-person healthcare costs in the U.S. And a third is energy. Fuel is more expensive in remote communities, and electricity can cost 3 to 5 times more in rural areas than urban ones. And schools don't benefit from the state's power cost equalization program that offsets high electricity prices for rural residents. DeFeo says those issues complicate the funding puzzle.
Those things aren't really education policy issues, but they're certainly affecting how we're doing education policy, and they are affecting our spending. As long as those things are realities, you know, we should expect those to be a part of our education spending conversation.
So even as education costs as a whole continue to grow, DeFeo says the higher spending in Alaska doesn't keep pace with the nation, and she says that's a worrying sign for Alaska schools.
Alaska doesn't produce all of the teachers that it needs to hire every year. And so we're competing for teachers in a national market.
She says higher salaries, better benefits, and working conditions for teachers and school staff could help keep Alaska from falling further behind. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 40 degrees and raining lightly. But there is a high wind and flood watch in effect from the National Weather Service for Southeast communities from Juneau down to Ketchikan. By Monday night, rain is expected to pick up across the whole panhandle, bringing 2 to 4 inches over the next 48 hours. And winds with gusts up to 60 miles an hour could bring tree falls, power outages, and other wind damage. Smith from the National Weather Service said the combination of intense rain and wind means isolated landslides are also possible on steep hillsides. You are listening to KTOO. For more stories, go to ktoo.org. It's just about 5 o'clock.